than us. There ain't nothing better, better, better. There ain't nothing better than us. There ain't nothing better than, better, than better. There ain't nothing better than, better than us. There ain't nothing better, better, better. There ain't nothing better than us. There ain't nothing better than, better.
Listening to KBOO Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO, the best in community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Danny Glover, and I want you to listen to what I listen to, Hard Knock Radio.
Yo, this ain't your boy, this your brother, Ice Life.
And this M1 International, RBG all day, baby.
On Hard Knock Radio.
Word up.
Check it out, yo.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Over the past couple of weeks, there's been a large number of protests all over the world. Haven't been covered too much here. But we definitely want to bring attention to what's going on in Burkina Faso. All the things that we've heard in the past about regime change, the role of AFRICOM and what it means in the continent, the demeaning of leaders who are standing for independence, and the outrage that the Western world has had when we've seen the French being kicked out. And we wanted to find out what's going on. So I wanted to talk to somebody who has been a part of these protests here in the States. His name is Charles Barron. We know him as former city council member in New York City, former Black Panther, or veteran Black Panther, I should say, and somebody who served in the legislature or has served in the legislature of New York. So, Brother Charles Barron, welcome to the show. And you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with Burkina Faso, and I wanted to see if maybe you could break down some of this for us, because it's been a complete media blackout, at least in terms of what's covered and not covered here.
Well, thank you very much, first, for having me on. And I'm telling you, this is one of the most exciting times to be alive, because revolution is coming to the what they call the Sahel region of Africa. You know, I'm going to go back in history a bit, but let me just start with the recent stuff and then take it back, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Recently, we saw the rise in the Sahel region of Africa. The Sahel region of Africa is right below the Sahara Desert and right above what they call the Southern Savannas. It's across Central Africa, and it is the most valuable, richest part of Africa. All of the gold, the bauxite, the diamonds, the cobalt, the uranium is in those areas. And the states includes Mali, Senegal, and includes Burkina Faso, and includes Niger, and includes, goes all the way over to the Sudan, right across Africa from west to coast. But this focus is on the West African states, particularly of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. Now, what happened recently is there was what they call military coup d'etats. And well, let me just say this, because some people say we're against the military taking out civilian governments. So you see some conflict is there. But this coup d'etat is different than the oppressors, than the imperialism's coup d'etats, where they take out legitimate governments that were representing the people and put in puppet governments, neo-colonialism, to really control the resources of Africa. So in this case, the people supported these generals, not even generals. And it's interesting, they were captains. That's why they call them Captain Ibrahim Traore. He's the one who has risen to the forefront, and he symbolizes the revolution on the African continent. He is the second coming of Thomas Sankara, who was also very instrumental in Africa. Matter of fact, Burkina Faso used to be called Upper Volta. Mm-hmm. Upper Volta. And they changed the name, he changed it, Thomas Sankara, to Burkina Faso, which meant the land of the upright people. Make a long story short, France, Franco-Africa, they used to call it, those Western states were controlled by France, and France and the United States put in these puppet governments. They call it ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, about 15 of them, all puppet governments serving the interests of France and the United States. Well, the people hooked up with Captain Ibrahim Traore and the military, and they kicked out the puppet government of the French and took it over for the people. And they basically said, France, get the hell out of Africa. Take America with you and leave the gold behind that you've been ripping off for decades. And so people went crazy. And he also said, we're not using French as the national language anymore, and we're going to stop the gold from being deported, and we're going to have our own gold refinery and use the money, the profit from the gold, for the people and not for the French. This drove everybody crazy. And then Niger did the same thing. They said, France, get the hell out of Africa and take America with you and leave the uranium behind, because France was ripping off uranium and lighting up a third of Europe while it kept Africa in the dark where the uranium originated from. Hmm. So what you hear now is that this brother Ibrahim Traore is only 37 years old, and they are captains, like Thomas Sankara was a captain in the military, took over. So now America's going crazy, France is going crazy, and now it has grown. Chad, France, get out of here. Senegal, France, get out of here. So they're getting rid of the neo-colonial puppet government so that they can keep the natural resources in Africa for their people. And this is what happened since he's been in. One, they had a $4.7 billion national debt. Now that he's keeping the gold for his people, the debt is erased. That's unheard of. And he also has free education, free health care. They're getting 21st century equipment for their agricultural business. They built an electric car. They're doing so much more now that this poor country is now having the resources used for the people of Burkina Faso so that they're no longer that little poor country. You know, the paradox of Africa is that it is the richest continent in the world with the poorest people because of imperialism and colonialism and exploitative capitalism. If I may, can I go back to history just a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. This is, you know, what you just explained, I think, first of all, is a very strong, correct narrative. It's one that is counter to what we've been hearing. Definitely, let's get the history, because this is a continuum of what we've always been trying to do in the continent.
Under France and America, 80% of the country was affected by terrorists that the French supported. So he's fighting terrorism. He's kicking out the imperialists, the colonialists. And check this out. They had mines for the gold, and it wasn't just France. It was three or four other European countries that had mining facilities ripping off the natural resources. He arrested them.
Wow.
He arrested them and said, you no longer can rip us off. So he arrested the mining CEOs from the European companies that are in there. He stopped the gold from being deported. He said, no, we're going to use it for us. And then he's changing the language. Now, he's setting this example. The reason why his name is all over the world now. I mean, these last few days, it's incredible what's happening. All over the world, they are supporting this brother in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, here in America. I've been to several demonstrations, even organized one, me and Omawale Clay from the December 12th movement. So everybody is eyes, all eyes are on Ibrahim Traore. He symbolizes the revolution that was started in the 1960s when, you remember, Kwame Nkrumah took over Ghana and Sekou Toure took over Guinea and Julius Nyerere took over Tanzania. Patrice Lumumba took over the Congo. Ahmed Bembella took over Algeria. And so all of this in the 1960s, we were supporting these revolutionary movements. And by the way, so was China and Russia. It was Europeans that were colonized in Africa, not China and Russia. But America made them the boogeymen so that Americans would be anti-China, anti-socialism, anti-communism, as America exploited the world through their lackeys. So here we come now. In the 21st century, something has happened that never happened before. Because even when Kwame and them took over, they didn't get a chance. They didn't get a chance to revolutionize, socialize the economy. They took over, and before Lumumba could do anything, he was assassinated.
And when he was assassinated, we were led to believe that this was some sort of internal conflict, and that
there you go.
Once again, Africans can't get along, and all that rhetoric. And then decades later, we found out it was the CIA.
There you go. You got it, brother. And that's what they did with Lumumba. They had a coup d'etat, a negative one, not supported by the people. This time, the oppressors got the generals to go against Kwame Nkrumah when he was out of the country. So he had to go to Sekou Toure's country, Guinea, and Sekou Toure made him a co-president with him. You know, that's where Stokely Carmichael, who was later known as Kwame Toure, that's where he got his name for. Kwame and Sekou Toure, because he went to Guinea and he took their names, Kwame Toure. So let's go back a bit. America was made a superpower in 1944. Prior to the World War II, I call them Imperialist War I and Imperialist War II, because that was what was about imperialism, fighting to see who's going to colonize the world and control the global economy. So they had a conference they called it the Bettenwood Conference in New Hampshire, here in America. 44 countries came together, mostly European countries. Russia was a part of that. And they said, listen, Roosevelt and Winston Churchill of England got together in 44 and said, listen, we just finished Imperialist War II. They said World War II. They finished World War II. And he said, our countries have been devastated. But you, America, the war wasn't on your land, but it was on ours. So you become the superpower. We'll support you as the new superpower. And we'll use the dollar to control the currency of the world. So we'll set up the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. We'll set up the World Bank. The World Bank is a part of America, control that. Europe control those two. And we'll then turn the League of Nations, which was started in 1920, we'll turn that into the United Nations in 1946. America will control that. And they said we'll then establish a military coalition called NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is a coalition of military groups, European and Western, and that way we will control the world. We will control the economy. So anybody, any country developing will have to use the dollar to trade, and they call it the gross domestic product. That means that the value of your goods and services, all of that has to be done with dollars. So for years, for decades, they still are in control. But here's the thing about Burkina Faso. So now all of that happened. And remember, even before that, in 1884 and 85, they had the Berlin Conference where they carved up Africa. Remember that? They carved up Africa. And then in 1889, the battle at Adwa in Ethiopia, they kicked the Italians' butts, so they were never colonized.
Right.
And so that was going on. And remember, before 1884, in the 1400s, Europe didn't exist. Europe was dying. And they went to Africa and stole us, enslaved us, and stole our resources to revive Europe. So all of that happens, and we get up to 1944. So now to respond to that, we, African people, Asian people, they had a conference in 1955 called the Bandung Conference. Remember Malcolm X talked
about that? Malcolm talks about that, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Bandung Conference. Asian and African nations came together in Bandung, Indonesia to throw off the yoke of imperialism and colonialism. 2 years after that, 2 years after that, Kwame Nkrumah liberates Ghana, 1957. Then 1960, all of those African leaders I mentioned before liberate their countries. Now, here's what happens. This is why Traoré is so important. Counter-revolutionary forces come now. They assassinate Nkrumah, Lumumba.
Right.
Get Nkrumah out. They get all these others out. So now they don't get a chance to establish a real revolution and change their economies. They wind up getting these economies back by a new form of colonization called neocolonialism.
Mm-hmm.
The new way to colonize us is to put a black face in a high place and make it appear as independence. So all of these African countries were becoming so-called independent, but really they were neo-colonial puppets. So while they had the political independence, they had the new flag, the new name of the country, they had the political seats, they didn't have the land. They didn't have the mining industries. Europe still controlled that from outside. So this is happening.
And let me just ask one question real quick. Brother Charles Barron is with us this afternoon. When you had these neo-colonial governments installed, did they still owe money to the IMF and World Bank? So, because we always heard this perpetual poverty, and you're trying to figure out, well, you have a new flag, you have a new president, you're no longer colonized, but it's almost like what we knew about with Haiti. You won, but you still got to pay the French money for your victory.
Oh, brother, wow. You hit it on the head, bro. You hit it on the head. They still were enslaved to the IMF. They still were enslaved to the World Bank, to the United Nations, where, you know, the General Assembly is one thing, but the there's only a few countries that really control the United Nations and have veto power, and America is one of them. So you're right. That's exactly what happened, because neocolonialism allows capitalism and imperialism and colonialism to maintain everything. Just put a black face on it and take care of that little bunch of black sellouts to make sure they're all right. And it's usually the military and some other political leaders. Matter of fact, I'll give you an example of it right here at home. We really live in a colonial capitalist country called America, and our black communities are domestic colonies of that colonial capitalist. So what happens is they have elections every 4 years, a duopoly, two parties, and they're fighting to see who is going to be the administrator of the colonial capitalist system that keeps our domestic colonies in poverty. So right. When you try racism, they wait, we'll give you a black president. But the complexion will change, but not the direction. They're going to stay exploiting. And then they'll give you black mayors and black governors. And right now, about 16, 17,000 black elected officials. But the system doesn't change. It's just the complexion of the people. Look at my New York. The attorney general is black. The head of the assembly is black. The head of the Senate is black. State Senate, black. The mayor is black, more blue, he's a cop. Anyway, the mayor is black. The speaker of the city council is black. They have black attorney, district attorneys, black heading unions. All of that blackness with a $252 billion from the state budget, $116 billion from the city budget, and we got 30% poverty in all black and brown communities. We got double-digit unemployment. We got high crime. We don't own the land in our communities. We don't own the businesses in our communities. We are a domestic colony. So the same thing was happening in Africa. Now,
I want to stop for 1 second.
Sure.
With what you were just saying, and this might be a little bit of a detour, but I think it's important. One, when you named off all these individuals that are in charge, and then you contrast it with the poverty and what have you, it leads to a conclusion that we saw surface right after Reconstruction, that black rule is harmful, and in fact blacks are unable to rule, and we've seen this type of rhetoric lead to legislative change. I'm thinking of the emergency manager that they started to install in Detroit and throughout Michigan. You know, so it's like, okay, yeah, we got some black folks there, but you know what? They can't rule themselves. So let's put an emergency manager to overthrow them. And I know they tried to do that in Jackson, Mississippi with Chokwe and then his son. Yeah.
Right.
So that's one concern. The other concern is, if we don't have this political analysis that you laid out, people knee-jerkly cheer when we see the black face. People say, just vote on the black face. And that's where the confusion starts, because, as you said, the black faces, especially in many places outside the U.S., tend to be very harmful. I'm thinking of the type of support that was given behind Wyclef in Haiti. Versus the government that was overthrown by the U.S. I'm thinking of the type of admiration we had for Obama, and overlooking the fact that this was a man that increased the military bases in Africa.
So I guess
I'm bringing this up to point that out, but also to ask, how do we become more sophisticated and not have the knee-jerk reaction of one, immediately calling somebody a coon because you don't like their rhetoric or don't understand them, or somebody planted that seed, or two, just knee-jerkly saying, if they're black, I'm voting for them, or if they're black, I'm riding with them, without fully understanding how they align politically, and more importantly, who are the forces that back them?
Wow, powerful question, and a great insight and analysis you give. Let me say one thing. First, to the fact that the blacks were incompetent. They were not. It was not about black incompetency or not being able to rule. They were not ruling. They were not in control of anything. They just put a black face on the colonialism that the whites were still participating in America and abroad. So these blacks had no real power. They were just the face of the colonial white power. It was the black face of white power. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that they couldn't manage stuff, because these double-digit poverty and unemployment existed before the blacks got in. We've had it for decades. So it wasn't that they didn't have managerial skills or they were incompetent. They were used to keep the masses in check just by what you said. The black face made us think we are making history. The first black president, the first black vice president female, the first black governor, the first black this, the first black that. Hakeem Jeffries is heading up the Democratic Party. He ain't heading up anything. He's not in control of anything.
Yeah, he's a puppet to Israel.
He's a puppet to Israel, and he's a puppet to Nancy Pelosi. So when you look at this, this is why it's important for us to go beyond race and look at, you know, people's ideology, look at people's history. So this is what they did. Our biggest battle now is neocolonialism. And Dr. Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah, remember his book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism. This is the last stage of colonialism and imperialism, most dangerous stage. But they put the black faces in high places. Even Martin Luther King said this. He said, the white power structure elevates these black faces in high places. They elevate these black leaders. They give them resources and they give them prestigious positions to take control over them and our beloved black communities. He called them manufactured leaders. He said these manufactured leaders are creating anger amongst the masses of our people. This is Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King said, we are domestic colonies.
Right.
He said the ghetto is a domestic colony, and we need to transfer power to the residents of the ghetto so that they can control their own destiny and be in cold. And that's what he called new politics. That is the same thing that my party said, the Black Panther Party. We said in our 10-point program, the first point is we want power to determine the destiny of our black and oppressed communities. We want control over all of the economic, political institutions to control our destiny. Let's go back to Africa now. Mm-hmm. Now, with all that we just mentioned, here comes Ibrahim Traore, and he rises up. He takes over a people's coup d'etat, and they kick out the puppet government, the black puppet government of the French. Now other countries are doing the same thing. And so here comes America saying, this guy's got to go. So they get this other black puppet, General Michael Langley.
Yeah.
Michael Langley is the commander of what you so accurately mentioned of AFRICOM, that Obama put in over 50 African countries, military bases. The new scare now is we got to stop terrorism. Before, it used to got to stop communism. Now it's we got to stop terrorism. They created the terrorist. I remember Ronald Reagan called Osama bin Laden an Afghani freedom fighter. And then Russia was in control of Afghanistan, and then after Carter and others got in and Clinton, he became a terrorist.
But also, you know, the folks fighting against apartheid by that same Ronald Reagan were called terrorists.
Exactly. Israel supported the apartheid regime, and yes. Benjamin Netanyahu supported Hamas when he was fighting against Arafat and the PLO. They created Hamas. And then they said, we'll give Hamas the Gaza Strip, and then we won't have to have another state because we can control the Gaza there. And when Hamas said, you can't control us, all of a sudden, they became the world terrorist worst. So here we have now, this is what's so deep now. It's a great time to be alive. Here we have the revolution in Sahel, the West African countries rising up, kicking out the colonialists. And another thing happens, BRICS. BRICS, the BRICS group. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa in 2009 came together and said, we are no longer going to be dependent on the IMF, the World Bank, nor the American dollar. This is scaring them to death. So now, here comes BRICS. And BRICS is expanding. Burkina Faso joins BRICS. And Nigeria joined BRICS. Ethiopia joined BRICS. Egypt joined BRICS. Cuba joined BRICS. BRICS is up to 25 countries now. So these countries say a couple of things. One, we're no longer going to be controlled by the IMF and the World Bank or the American dollar. This is so significant, brother. Now they're saying we're going to start what they call a CRA, the Contingent Agreement, the Contingent Reserve Agreement to replace the IMF. So these countries are going to put money into the CRA. Then they're going to start the New Development Bank, the NDB. This New Development Bank is going to take the place of the World Bank. Then they said, we don't have a BRICS currency yet, but we are going to use our local currency to do the trading and not the American dollar. This is why Donald Trump was elected, because when he says we want to make America great again, we just see it from racist eyes and domestically. But he was saying that internationally, globally, because the American empire is declining. The American dollar that Musk made his money off is declining. So all of the billionaires got with Trump to say, what are you going to do internationally? They're no longer using our dollar. We can't even punish Cuba like we want to, because this blockade won't mean anything if all these countries start to trade with Cuba. Before, we had control over the global community and the dollar, so we could punish anybody that chose a non-capitalist path for development. We can't do that now because of BRICS. Now, BRICS is the polar south countries, and the G7 is the polar north countries. The polar north countries are those countries that instituted imperialism and colonialism, that is, the United Kingdom, United States, France, Germany, that is Japan, and that is Canada. These are the countries of the polar north, imperialist. The polar south countries are the countries in Asia, Africa, Latin America, and in the Caribbean. So now the polar south said, we're going to trade with each other. We're not going to let you run the global economy. So here's what's happening. Now, with all of that that I just said, instead of the polar north countries controlling the economy, they control 30% of the gross domestic product and 10% of the 8 billion in population. That's the G7. But right. The polar south countries control 55% of the population and 45% of the gross domestic product. So now you have, you know, Trump coming in, panicking. Oh, we're going to take Canada. Yeah, Canada says, yeah, right. So they're fighting. Oh, we'll take Greenland, please. So they're fighting. The EU is fighting them with Finland. Oh, we'll take the Panama Canal. And we're going to turn the Gaza Strip into a Riviera. And we're going to have the Gulf of America instead of the Gulf America of Africa.
Mexico.
Mexico. Yeah. So yeah. All of that crap he's saying, he's panicking. And he said, I'll use tariffs. I'm going to tax you, China, on your goods. Now, let me tell you how much sense that makes. He claims that all of those countries that join BRICS, I'm going to institute 100% tariffs on you. Now, listen, come on now. If you're talking about products in the world and consumer markets, America has 330-plus million people for these countries to impose their products on. Look at BRICS. China, 1.4 billion. India, 1.4 billion. Nigeria, 230 million.
Right.
Egypt, you know, we're talking about 55% over 4-point-some-odd billion people are represented in the BRICS coalition, and maybe 10% are represented in the... So American empire is declining like all empires. The Roman Empire rose and fell. The Ottoman Empire rose and fell. The British Empire, they said the sun never set on the British Empire. Now it's a little cloudy, mud cloud in Europe talking about Brexit. So this is the global revolution that's occurring. And now domestically, both parties are in turmoil. Domestically, both parties are imploding. The Republicans can't even have rallies without their own people confronting them. The Democrats are in peril because they're calling Hakeem Jeffries weak because he was afraid to even fight Trump. And they're mad at Chuck Schumer because he passed the CR, Continuing Resolution, to stop this country from, you know, shutting down the government, which was a bunch of nonsense. And so they're imploding as the revolution in Africa and the world is exploding.
Brother Charles Barron is with us this afternoon, and I'm glad you're breaking a lot of this down. I want to come back to BRICS for a second, because I think most people, and myself included, when I initially heard that, thought it had something to do with Europe because of the Brexit. So, you know, you're thinking BRICS, oh, that must be some British thing. But the countries that are a part of it, Russia, China, Brazil, I'll start with those. We saw a very, at least he was depicted, so I don't know, I'm going to assume that what we saw was not good when that general took over Brazil and seemed to want to align himself with Trump, and that seemed problematic. You have people here that look at China and say, well, China's the new colonizer of Africa. And Russia still, you know, depending on who you talk to, you know, either they're an imperialist power or they're a country that's reacting to imperialism. How do we kind of dice through that, especially if we're looking at it from an African perspective? Let's start with China. Is China a neo-colonialist power when it comes to Africa, or is this an ally and a friend?
You know, brother, this is why you have this broadcast. You ask the most profound questions, and it enables us to clarify some neo-colonial or some imperialist propaganda. Let's look back a little bit on Russia and China historically. You noticed that during the period of colonialism, Russia and China didn't colonize any African country, did they? None.
Mm-mm. None.
Not one. Most of us have European last names, not Russian or Chinese last names.
Right.
Because we have the last name of our colonizers. Most of us speak the language of our colonizers, English, French, German, whatever, not Russian, not Chinese. So first of all, historically, Russia and China did not colonize us. On the contrary, historically, Russia and China supported our liberation movements. They supported the liberation movements in Africa. SWAPO with Sam Nujoma in Namibia. They supported most of Mozambique, Frelimo. They supported the liberation movements because it was called a bipolar world, United States versus Russia, even though that wasn't true. It was always a unipolar world. The United States had far higher gross domestic product than Russia. Anyway, they have no history of that. That's number one. Number two, no one ever said that Africa don't trust France or the United States. They settled for that Nobody raised from the real colonists. Here's the most important part. African leaders like Traore and others, they're not stupid. They're very smart. They learned from their oppression. They learned from colonialism. When they sat with Russia and they sat with China and Turkey, they said, this is a new day. Yes, we're going to deal with you. Yes, we can talk about you having our resources, but it's going to be a mutually beneficial relationship. Russia and China are not talking about building any military bases in Africa. Russia and China are not saying that you must have this kind of government if you want our assistance. None of that is happening. This is why it's so important. The revolution is so important because these leaders, like the ones that they assassinated and took out of power, Kwame, they are principled, they are in control, and they are backed by the masses. So now, I'm not saying that there's not a bad Chinese company somewhere in a weaker African state that might be, you know, getting over. But there is no recolonizing of Africa through Russia and through China. As a matter of fact, remember, if it wasn't for Russia, Cuba would have been in a lot of trouble because Russia came to Cuba's rescue when America was, see, when America took over Cuba and Haiti and all of that, nobody said anything. The minute we get our independence, and when you're an independent sovereign nation, you're allowed to have relationships with whomever you want. America deals with Russia. America deals with Iran. They deal with all of these countries and tell you something else. So, yes, they're dealing with Russia. Yes, they're dealing with China. And yes, Russia, China, any country dealing with Africa is out for their own self-interest. And African people have to be strong and say, you can go ahead and be out for your own self-interest, but this is our interest. And this is how the relationship is going to be in the 21st century. It will be mutually beneficial. So they're angry. They have to make Russia and China as boogeymen so that they can no longer support or try to get the world to say they're trying to recolonize, because Russia is helping them with military equipment, China's helping them with things, and in return, they're sharing the resources. But it's a mutually beneficial relationship. It's a win-win, like all other countries have with other countries in the world.
Part of the challenge we have, Brother Charles Barron, is seeing or even imagining Africa or various countries throughout Africa having people who are strong. Mm. And what I mean by that, if proverbially speaking, we are colonized, we see ourselves with our back up against the wall and can't literally imagine what it means when you can walk freely. So when I think we tend to project a lot of our own thoughts onto a international situation where we don't know the full range of things. Mm-hmm. So again, I start off with, they got black people there, so you know I'm voting on black, right? Right. That's how we see it here, right? And we may not realize that blackness is not a good thing, even though they're doing some things that we may like. I forget the brother that is wanted to start the basketball league, you know, in Rwanda. Where do you stand with him? You know, you got the basketball league, but mm-hmm. he's also somebody that was behind the genocide. So, you know, you got to have that nuance and understanding. I bring this up because when we say, oh, well, they're sitting down with China, therefore, you know, China got them by the neck. China's going to, you know, lock them in. They're talking with Russia. Russia's going to control them. We can't see that. Well, no, maybe they're sitting down and they're cutting a deal that makes perfect sense. Correct. and is equitable for all the parties. Correct. Because we can't see ourselves in a balanced relationship. Correct. Because of the way that we deal with things here. We can never see it here.
Look, man, you're on it this morning, my brother. You're on it. I guarantee you, as much as I have proven to my community that I am loyal to them, that I am not for sale, you let me sit in a restaurant with two white men with shirts and ties, and some black person sees us through the window, the first thing they're going to say, look at Charles, he's selling us out. I can't be sitting there getting over them for my people. I can't be sitting there with all my integrity intact and having some mutually beneficial relationship, because we still have a colonial mentality. We still think the white man's ice is colder. So no matter what we do, it seems that you down your own African self. It can't be that these brothers and sisters learned a lot from their experiences. They're loyal to their people, and they're going to establish relationships with the global community like it never has been established before. And that's why this is the greatest time to be alive. And that's why we say hands off Ibrahim Traoré, hands off Burkina Faso, hands off Africa. And look at the two parties in America. And then we don't say nothing about this sometime. Everybody's talking about Musk and Doge and how he's laying off him and Trump federal workers, right? And some of the Democrats are becoming rising stars criticizing Trump, criticizing Musk. Well, let me tell you something. Doge, meet Rego. Rego is the concept of reinventing government. Musk, meet Gore. Al Gore was the vice president under the conservative president, Bill Clinton. Al Gore's responsibility was to do what? The same thing Musk is doing.
Right.
Shrink government. And how did he justify it? Get rid of waste. Get rid of inefficiency.
I remember that.
Remember that, right? Now, mm-hmm. Al Gore eliminated 377,000 federal jobs. Musk, to this point, has eliminated 100,000. Nobody demonstrated against Gore because he was a Democrat. And as you said, Barack Obama built more military bases in Africa than any other president. Nobody demonstrated against him. Barack Obama, you know this guy, Holman, who is now mm-hmm. the chief deportations right. officer of Trump. He was under
Obama.
He deported with Obama 2.5 million. They're trying to do a million a year under Trump. Trump has not even caught up to Obama yet in deportation. They used to call him the chief in deportation. Now, nobody demonstrated. Nobody made a, but my point is the two parties are very similar. Fundamentally, they're very the same. But one, as Malcolm said, is a fox. Democrats, they smile at you while they bite you and oppress you. And so you feel a little more comfortable in your oppression under the Democrats. Whereas the Republicans under Trump, they're the fox. They're going to show you the fangs. The wolf. They're going to show you the fangs, and they're going to let you know I'm going to bite you because I hate you. And they don't let you know. So you demonstrate against that, but you let the oppression of the Democrats go because they made you feel more comfortable. They had an oxymoron, passionate capitalism, as Hakeem Jeffries would call it.
Many of us believe that you have an opportunity to maybe cut a deal and make some inroads with Ocasio and Sanders and the Democrats, that if we get them in there, we won't have as many battles to fight. We won't have that there's ways to negotiate and maybe sway the winds in a different direction. Is that something that you can see happening, or is that fanciful thinking? So I'm thinking to myself, they're choosing a terrain in which they're going to fight on. Would it make sense to go with, you know, the terrain where you don't have to do as much fighting? in the case of, you know, maybe doing a dance that may seem uncomfortable or even unpopular on the surface, but at least you're making some inroads. And that's a way in which many have rationalized, you know, getting behind, maybe Obama getting behind, exactly. The Democrats, or even Hakeem Jeffries, like, brother, you know, let him cook a little, you know, we can talk to him. He came to my house, came to my high school, so I know I could talk to the brother and get him to move in another direction. Is that fanciful thinking?
Man, you on it this morning. You know, that's why I am against the lesser of two evils, the one that's going to talk to me. I don't want your fangs in me, period. I don't want no evil, lesser or greater. I want no evil. So it is sometimes worse to have the Kamala Harris's and the Obamas and the Hakeem Jeffries and all of these folk, because you have a tendency to think you made progress and you have less of a fight, but your oppression is no less. Now let's just go with facts. Under George Bush Jr., 25% poverty in the black community. Under Obama, 27% poverty in the black community. It went down to 22, 23 by the time he left. Under Biden, over 20% poverty. Under Trump, 20% poverty. It was no difference. So what? You feel a little more comfortable. And you might get a few more social programs. And I'm not saying they're identical, but they are fundamentally the same. They're not identical, but they are fundamentally, for a capitalist system, for imperialist wars, they're fundamentally, the poverty exists, no matter who's in, to the same level, as I just mentioned, in our communities. The crime still exists. The police still beating us. Look, we have Barack Obama and a black attorney general, U.S. Attorney General Holder, and they didn't indict no police officers, none. Yeah. We got Tish James here, and we have a special prosecutor's office for prosecuting police brutality, and we have a black woman, Letitia James, she prosecuted none. When Jahlil Montcalm, the Black Liberation Army leader Jahlil Montcalm, was in jail. He got 25 to life. He did his 25. He had an impeccable record incarcerated, and they wouldn't give him any parole until he spent over 40 years, close to 50 years in there. And so a white judge released him, said, you know, this is a death sentence. There's COVID in the jail. So he had an impeccable record. He shouldn't be in here. A black judge released him. Tish James, the attorney.
You mean a white judge released him.
Keep messing up. Yeah. A white judge released him, and Tish James appealed it, and he was put back in jail, and he caught COVID. Thank God he survived it, and we got the parole board to let him out. So, you know, these folk are making you comfortable in your oppression, and they'll say things like, take, you know, DEI. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. These DEI programs were designed to keep you asleep and to make you have the appearance. And yes, some of us did get gigs. I'm not going to deny that. Some of us did get gigs. But what are you talking about? Diversity? Inclusion into what? A capitalist society that's exploiting you? Equity, you ain't never going to get equity. That's out the question. And even the targeting target. Target's DEI program was a three-year program. It was ending this year anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
It was, and it benefits white women more than it does us. So these misleadership classes of people like the Shoptons and others, they mislead you into, you know, boycott Target, and Shopton says go to Costco's. Oh, whoa, that's a great solution. So, you know, we got to look at this misleadership class that makes you feel more comfortable in your oppression, and some of the peripheral things that make them a little different than the Republicans, but fundamentally, they're the same.
We've been talking with Brother Charles Barron. As we're wrapping up, because we have less than a minute, give people some marching orders in terms of I was going to say Burak Faso, Burkina, Burkina Faso. Yeah. Thank you.
Brothers and sisters, I'll give you my number. Stay in touch with me. 917-763-3091. That's 917-763-3091. We had a spirited demonstration on April 30th. It was Africa Resistance Day. And we had a march with the December 12th movement, Omawale Clay and Roger Wareham, Colette Peen, and we had hundreds of people. We gathered at the French Mission in Midtown Manhattan and marched over to the UN, United States Mission to the UN, spirited rally. We also was a part of Burkina Faso on Times Square. The Burkina Faso brothers and sisters had a rally. And I'll send you a clip of that, Brother D, that we had a rally that I spoke at and Omawale spoke at. I was representing Operation Power. And we're having our radio program comes on every Friday on WBAI at WBAI.org from 5 to 6 every Friday. So we're going to be talking about Burkina Faso this Friday, and we're going to talk about the women of Burkina Faso that's fighting for liberation and being ignored.
Well, there you have it, and that's a good note to end on. Brother Charles Barron, we will have you back, and if not, we will check you out on our sister station, WBAI, on Fridays at 5 o'clock Eastern Time, and continue this conversation on Burkina Faso and the revolution that's going on in the Sahel states.
Yep.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. Waters, we'll be right back.
Our spirits rise. It's in the motherland. Ancient wisdom lies. Call and response. We hear voices in the drum. Spiritual light. We remember where we're from.
It all began in Africa.
KPRO FM program, power to the people.
This is Bird Note. Ayukwe Nikichu. Nek now Tiana Williams Klassen, Esi Pulik Neme. I am a Yurok tribal member from the village of Huexquel. My home is in northwestern California, where the Klamath River meets the Pacific Ocean, and in the mountains and the beautiful coastlines here. The Yurok people have co-evolved with this region as both caretakers and recipients of its bounties. Yurok and surrounding tribes are deeply connected with our traditional lands, but that relationship was profoundly damaged after the California Gold Rush. Yurok were forced off of our land, which was then managed for extraction. This caused many casualties. Preganish, or California condor, was driven locally extinct. Ecologically, as scavengers, condors are the ultimate environmental cleanup crew. Culturally, Preganish ties closely to local tribal obligations as world renewal people. Preganish carries our prayers for the world to be in balance. Our elders have long been committed to restoring Preganish to Yurok ancestral territory, and it has been the focus of my entire career. The Yurok tribe has forged a partnership with the National Park Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to bring condors back home. I'm happy to say that my 4-year-old daughter will grow up with condors in her sky. In May 2022, after more than a century, the first condors flew free in Yurok country. We are bringing Preganish, a member of our community, back home. For Bird Note, this is Tiana Williams Clausen.
This is Bird Note. Imagine this. You're at the edge of a young forest, especially one dominated by aspen and poplar, and you're hearing this accelerating thumping sound. What's going on in there? Is somebody starting up an engine? Well, what you're hearing is a male ruffed grouse performing his drumming display. He's the size and shape of a large, rusty brown chicken, and he's standing on a resonant, fallen log in the shelter of a brushy thicket. He's thumping the air with his wings. He raises them and, cupping them forward, beats the air, slowly at first, then faster and faster, creating a reverberating drum roll. Drumming announces a male's territory and his desire for a mate. The ruffed grouse takes its name from the male's long neck feathers, which, in display to the female, flex outward to form a thick neck ruff. The ruffed grouse is typically a shy denizen of the forest, but this time of year, he's a star percussionist in nature's symphony. You can take a peek at a ruffed grouse and hear his drumming again by coming to birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m.